This insert is brought to you by Radio K Pulpit 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.
Good afternoon, family and friends of Radio K Pulpit on 7 to 9 a.m. Thank you for joining me on my program called Rise. I'm Renette Marburg, and this is the program where we give you hope, wisdom, and guidance and knowledge when real life happens to the family. And we often discuss relevant and often unspoken issues in the family life. But we speak it within the truth and in love. And today I have a fabulous guest in my studio with me today. And she has been on my program before, and she's just got a wealth of knowledge. And she's a life coach, and Shirley Lafleur. And she supports those that are struggling with addiction within the family. But today we're going to talk about a specific addiction, and we're going to talk about eating disorders, and especially focusing on anorexia. It seems to be the most common and the most prevalent amongst our youth. And Shirley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Renette. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back in the studio, and it's a pleasure, yes, to address the community out there, because I do believe that this is something that people don't often talk about, and it is often stigmatized. So, yes, it does also, I want to add, you are quite right. You know, I work with addiction, but this certainly also falls in the field, and my background is also that I have actually worked in a eating disorder clinic, which was very specialized, and then the, you know, there's been co-addictions. But yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Great. So we're going to just take a break, and we're going to listen to an amazing track right now, and we'll be back with you with further information on anorexia nervosa. Good afternoon, family and friends, and thank you for joining me this afternoon. And we are so blessed to have Shirley Lafleur, a life coach, in the studio with me today, and we are going to be dealing with anorexia nervosa. And it is a subject that is very painful in many cases and doesn't often know how it presents itself. So Shirley, you know, I just want you to give us a little bit of a background of how did you land up getting involved with, you know, the eating disorders. And, you know, you said by chance, but I'd like you just to share that with us.
Thank you, Renette. Yes, it was really just by chance. It was not planned. In fact, I do remember having a thought that this is one area that I do not want to work in, even addiction for that matter, you know. So I've often just worked in a neuroclinic with general anxiety and depression. And yes, it was not something that I even thought about. Fortunately for me, I can say now, fortunately, a colleague and very good friend of mine, you know, directed me to this clinic when there was a vacancy available. And I thought, yes, but I'm not looking for a job. I'm quite happy where I am, you know. And she was actually very interested, and she said, I think you should go. And so I went, and I think what attracted me most was the area, because I often said to myself that, oh, I'd love to work in a place where there's just lots of trees and, you know, the scenery and the mountain where I'm able to see that. And it was just perfect, you know. That attracted me, and I found myself at this specific clinic. And I must say, you know, during my time there, I actually realized that it was very much directed by the hand of God. You know, yes. I'm Christian, I'm born again, I do believe nothing is by chance. And when I landed up in that clinic, I discovered actually why I was placed there, you know. It is very intensive, very painful to work with people with eating disorders and really witnessing the suffering that, you know, those with people with eating disorders go through. But I realize that, yes, we do have to, they do have to go through a process of treatment in recovery, but I was urged and, you know, just led to also intercede for them in prayer. And I must say that that has, I have many testimonies about having really just interceded when it seemed like other I don't want to discard any importance of the other therapy, you know, but this is a very important thing as well, you know, this spiritual aspect of it, because often in addiction even we say that those that are addicted have the addiction has become their higher power. And it's the same with eating disorders as well. So just that importance of being redirected to spirituality, you know, is very, very important in the recovery process as well, together with all other therapies. That is so, so important. I mean, I can just say that just the physical aspect, you know, of course, you know, they need to start eating so that the physical health can improve. But really, the spiritual aspect for me, I realized that it was kind of a ministry that I was entering into.
Okay, and you know, just listening to your the fact that you're saying there's the power in prayer, and that is where our resource comes from. When we do the counselling and when we go do the life coaching, and that is where people I think are lacking the most is their spiritual world is running empty. And so just give me sort of a scenario of age groups. What were you faced in, you know, I don't know anything about a clinic. You know, if possibly people, you know, a lot of people think it's like, as you said, stigmatized to go to a clinic. I just want you to give us what a clinic would present. You know, what is it the fact that, you know, what takes you to have to get into the clinic? You know, how do we navigate that process?
So I think it's with anorexia, we're talking specifically about anorexia today.
Yes.
It's a very difficult one, you know. So that is very difficult. And most of the time when those anorexic sufferers enter treatment, it's because the families was very, very scared and fearful for their lives, that they are not going to make it, because the mortality rate for people with anorexia is actually very high.
What are the statistics for that?
The last time I checked, it was like 20%, you know.
That is high.
And that is very, very high. I know that, you know, we have contacts in the UK and worked with people in the UK as well. And I think one of the things that they were most concerned about is that there would not actually be very, very higher than that, very much higher than that. And that, you know, it's not calculated properly, because sufferers may die from heart failure or kidney failure or any other physical
even
thing,
suicide.
You know. Yes, but it's not tied down to the anorexia or the eating disorder. It's not related, it's not connected with it, you know. So they miss actually that. And I think that is...
That's where the statistics aren't actually the truth.
Yeah, it's not really the truth. Yeah, and people are really fearful that it might be even higher than that as well. Yeah.
Yes. And age group. I know even old people, you know, they're pining, they just stop eating. So what age group did you deal with?
Well, we were compelled to only deal with 18 years and over. And I can really not say specifically whether it was mostly teens or, you know, in what age group, maybe 25 to 35. But I must say across the board, really, you know. Maybe I think today, presently, it's become more and more evident in our youth, with all the pressures that they are going through. But, I mean, you know, we've had clients from 18 years to 70, you know, battling with anorexia still, you know. So it really is very difficult. Illness.
It is a very difficult illness. I'm actually a survivor of anorexia myself. That is why I'm asking the questions. I know a lot of the answers. But, you know, I've been 42 years battling it. And I'm clearly delivered of it now. But
yeah. Wonderful.
Praise the Lord. Yeah, just spiritually and physically as well. Praise the Lord. But again, it also came to, you know, the control thing. So what is, how does it present itself? What is the common reasons for anorexia to come? You know, how does it happen? Why does it happen?
There are many causes for anorexia, Renette, ranging from trauma, ranging from genetics, you know, social pressures is also part of it. but I do think you mentioned the word control, and often we have found that with eating disorder sufferers, and especially anorexia, who are such a powerful thing that, hey, we could almost say that, you know, where life has become unmanageable, they feel that they have a sense of that they've lost control. So the eating disorder, the food becomes the one thing that they can control in their lives, and they do it so powerfully, you know, to their own detriment. But that's really what happens with people with anorexia. That's a control thing, you know. It's a wanting to feel safe also, you know. They feel very safe with their rituals that they develop. It's a place of safety. So when those things are absent for whatever reason in their lives, you know, the eating disorder become that thing that they really cling to and which they think provides them with that safety, with that security, and with that control that they so much need at that point in their lives.
And, you know, just if you can think back on some cases, you know, obviously we're not going to mention names, just, you know, some cases of what is that, maybe the common things that really seem to be, you know, is it relationships, is it, you know, something specific like molestation, you know, these different things that trigger these states of activity. You know, is it media? What is it that we are needing to be very aware of if we've got children starting to show signs of, especially in the youth, it starts in the youth, you know, the young people starting to, you know, get teased, or what is it that really is the answer to, I won't say need the answer, but what does it present itself like?
I think maybe there's various factors that's involved, you know, but if you just take the social aspect, you know, our youth are so pressurized to perform these days, you know, and so it's that need to be perfect, the need to achieve, you know, which is like, you know, almost unattainable, you know, nobody's perfect. And so just that pressure and the competition amongst our youth also, you know. That certainly, I think, plays a role. And of course, not everybody that that finds themselves in scenarios where they are pressurized or expect to have, or where there's unrealistic expectations on them, or they have that need for perfection, desire for perfection. Not all of them develop eating disorders, you know. So there's also a certain kind of criteria almost that all that come together, you know, like genetics that also play a role. But certainly I do find that that is a big thing amongst our youth. And also, you know, in our day and age, there's so much emphasis on appearance, you know. You have to have the perfect look. I can also just say my daughter has been a gymnast, you know, and I must say I had antennas.
Antennas.
So there's all these pressures, you know, on our youth today, with ballerinas, with gymnasts, you know, they have to be light so that they can perform. So unknowingly, very unknowingly,
it creeps up on them,
you know. And then also, I think within families where there may be some dysfunction and rules about no talk, no talk about what's going on, no feeling, and so also the eating disorder also becomes a way of, especially with anorexics, the food begins to talk for them. You know,
okay.
They talk with their food. They talk with their food. And that is also, I think, in my experience, what we have often found, that given the space in a clinic, in a recovery space, where they can just begin to open up and share about whatever has impacted them in their life also becomes quite an important factor in their recovery and maintaining their recovery.
Wonderful. So we're going to continue after the break, just on the topic of, when it comes into the counseling session, how do you unpack and how do you get to the process of healing and what is it that it looks like? So we're going to quickly take a break and continue the conversation. Thank you, Shirley. That was a good amount of information for us. Thank you again for joining us this afternoon, and it's been a great pleasure to have Shirley LaFleur in the studio with me this afternoon, and we are talking about anorexia nervosa, and she's a life coach, and she's actually currently dealing and supporting children and families that are stuck in these forms of addiction, but we're going to concentrate on anorexia this afternoon. So tell me, Shirley, we often don't see the signs, we live in denial, and again, you mentioned earlier on about the sports, a lot of kids put pressure on, and then they go into their teenhoods and their bodies start changing, and then they're thin and some of them are overweight. So just give us, where does it actually start becoming an issue, and what does it look like, and where as parents that we need to listen and learn from what's happening in our children's lives?
I think for parents, it might be very important, like I said, creeps up on you. But there are certain signs to look out for, And one of them is increased focus on body and appearance, And lots of body talk, obsession with weight, being, or feeling light even, or weight loss, or focusing on diet, And often we would, I think, I've had it... I've often heard a client say, I'm just on a diet. I just needed to lose one or two. It was festive season. So over 18, so now I'm just needing to. So they find all of these excuses. But for parents really to take note when it becomes a pattern, when that excuses of why there's so much focus on body and weight loss, becomes a pattern. And then also refusal to eat certain foods, becoming vegetarian. And I know not wanting to eat processed foods. And I know there's a lot of talk going around about eating healthily and all of that. But we all know, as a parent, you do know when it's become an obsession, and when there is a complete cut out of certain foods like carbs, just refusing to eat carbs and cutting it out completely. I think that is really a warning signal for any mother, for that matter, because we are the ones that feed. And then also finding excuses, with us all, teens alike, when they go out, when they socialize, there's always food involved, so it's going out for pizza or burgers or whatever, and then just finding excuses not to engage, and then that becoming a pattern, and then that slowly withdrawing and isolating and withdrawing from the friend circle, spending more time in the room, and then of course, physically you can see it, sleeping a lot, the physical tiredness, dehydration, things that you can actually just, together with the extreme weight loss, because the weight loss cannot be ignored, Often, I think people with anorexia are very clever. They then overdress,
Yes.
They then overdress, wear very big clothes to hide, So those are maybe just small signs that parents can be just alert to if it happens too often. And then also, I think exercise is a big thing, you know. And again, you know, we'll...
Getting addicted.
Yeah,
well.
Getting addicted. And then I've often also experienced with our clients, you know, they may have had severe injuries, but they still exercise.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
And then I think one other aspect for parents to really be alert to is that, you know, that deep sense of worthlessness that presents with people with eating disorders, and especially anorexia, you know. It's so extreme. That self-loathing is so, so, so extreme, you know, and very harsh with themselves, very critical of themselves. And again, it presents even with a high achievement and the perfectionism, you know, just all interrelate with each other, and good is never good enough. So they continually find themselves in a no-win situation. And it's like a cycle, you know, of having this desire for perfection, high achievement, not making it, feeling so critical about themselves, harsh, criticizing themselves harshly, you know, it just becomes a vicious cycle of self-loathing. And that is also something really to, you know, to begin to notice when your child tells you, no, no, that's not for me. I will never be able to do that, or I can't, you know. It's for parents really to notice that as well, coupled, of course, together with other symptoms, you know. But notice that self-talk. Notice how they are putting themselves down all the time, and to really... help them in changing that, you know, because that's also so much part of when it comes to, when we're talking about recovery, that's so much part of it, you know. It's not just about feeding them and getting them physically healthy. It's also beginning to change their feeling and their, how they feel about themselves, you know, and their thinking, the beliefs that go with it. Because with anorexia, the thinking is so distorted, you know. Thinking about themselves as a person, thinking about their body image, you know, everything is distorted. The thinking is so distorted. So there really needs to be a renewal of the mind as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so what is it that, you know, when you were coaching, how would you navigate them on this healing process?
I guess there's many different approaches to that. I focused mostly, or not talking about the physical health that needs to be restored. So the body needs the food, the brain needs the food to start functioning, you know. But I think very specifically for me, it was the focusing on the self-esteem, the self-worth, you know. And it's really cognitive, working with the cognitions, you know, the beliefs, the... irrational beliefs about them, not just about the food, but also, and this is what I'm doing in the coaching as well, you know, zooming in on the irrational beliefs around food and eating and exercise and all of that. But it's also very much about the person, because they really feel that they don't have any worth. And so it's reinstilling that, you know, you don't have to do anything to be worthy. You know, you are worthy to begin with. So there's lots of work with my coaching around self-esteem.
There's clearly not a quick fix.
There's clearly not a quick fix.
So definitely the journey from the beginning of acknowledging the problem, you know, what is your, more or less your turnaround expectation? Because, you know, obviously when they're in a program, then we start making other expectations of them, which also puts them under pressure. So what is it that, you know, but maybe we can talk about that in the next section of, you know, how do we come alongside as public and as community? Because often we'll say, oh, you're so thin, like my dad used to call me Sprinkon, and then you get the compliments, oh, you've lost so much weight, and then you stick to it. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we need to be very careful of that Are we supposed to be honest? Are we supposed to speak out about it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a secret. So maybe we can just in the next section, I think we can just possibly look at just, you know, how do we come around and support somebody that is suffering from this this terrible disease.
Absolutely. But I do want to maybe just conclude also.
Please do that.
To add to what I was saying, you know, about working with self-esteem. But I think what is also alongside that is people with eating disorders also, like I said, they talk with their feelings, you know. So there's lots of focus also on learning skills, training, learning how to regulate your emotions, you know, and dealing with conflict and how to express yourself and really just empowering themselves, you know, which is an important part of.
Okay, so maybe you can just give us that you know, formula, just those few pointers of how you can, what we can do with the children that are, or the person, not necessarily just children and youth, of how does that look? So we're going to quickly take a break and then we're going to follow up with those important guidelines of how to navigate through this and support those that are suffering from anorexia. Thank you so much, Shirley. We'll chat soon straight after this. Good afternoon, family and friends, and just thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, and I hope you stayed tuned in. We've had Shirley Lafleur, a life coach, and she has worked closely within a clinic as a support system for those that have suffered from anorexia nervosa, and it obviously, you know, it stems across many ages. There's no age limit to it, but we do find that it sort of manifests in the youth a lot more than in other areas of our adulthood in that. So just give us, you know, you were sharing us a few guidelines of how do we navigate and how do we as, you know, people that know and family that know and see that there is a problem and not put more pressure on the child to eat and all that stuff. How do we, what are the guidelines that we can walk the road with somebody that with anorexia?
I think the first thing that comes to mind for me, you know,
yes.
Don't fight.
don't
fight
force.
With it. Don't force. Don't fight with it, you know, because it's a power struggle.
Yes.
You know, people with anorexia are very stubborn.
They don't really got control.
Yeah. Mm. So you're going to lose that one, you know, so it's not to fight over food. and as hard as it may be, you know, just be there as support. Often, I would say, we would say in treatment, we'd say, you know, it's not about the food, it's about the feelings.
Yes.
So, whatever is going on, rituals, food behavior that's dysfunctional, whatever's going on, it's never about that. It's about coming on board, being supportive, asking, or saying, I notice you're not feeling that great, or what seems to be the problem, or I'm here if you're needing to talk, but to be in that space where you can really not focus so much on how the ED presents in terms of the behaviors, but coming from a point of where you are supporting. You know, that's very important for
families. So the patterns,
families.
The patterns sometimes stay longer than the process.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just the guidelines on, you know, the urgency of it.
I think also often within families, you know, there's so much focus on appearance, and for family also to understand that that's really a no. You know, it's the same with addiction, you know. You're not going to allow someone else in the family or somebody else even from outside to come and use in your house or go to places, you know. That needs to really, you need to abstain from that, you know. And the same with people with anorexia. Don't talk about body image. Don't talk about appearance. If you're needing to give a compliment, let it be about what the person has done, behavior, you know. Mm. Are you kind? You're helpful. What you did was really helpful. Mm. But to try and abstain from the appearance thing, because that's really a big thing for them. In fact, they don't hear you say that, oh, you're looking good. What they hear is, you look fat.
Yes, that's the truth. That
so that's the distorted thinking that goes with anorexic sufferers, you know, and which, again, like I said, you know, there needs to be a renewal of the mind as well. So the cognitive therapy is very important there. And then also, for families to, as far as possible, not to be influenced by all the negative ED behavior, especially when it comes to meal times, you know. You know, often there's so much focus on the sufferer. You know, all the tension goes there, all the focus goes there. So meal times, which is supposed to be family times, just become so chaotic. You know, and so it's for families to maintain that normality within the family when it comes to food and eating, and the you know, it's part of what we do. But also with sensitivity, you know, because you're not going to, if you know that the person is suffering with anorexia and there is such a big fear, because that's what it is, a big fear of food, you know, you're not going to behave in very inappropriate way, that be not sensitive. You're going to be sensitive around it, you know, you're not going to come with your burger if you know that this is what the person is struggling with, you know, although we're wanting to normalize. So there's a process, it's not a quick fix, it's a long thing, but eventually we do want to get them there where there is no exclusion of anything, but it's in moderation. You know,
very powerful.
And then I do want to say to families is to seek professional help. You know, that's but really important, to seek professional.
Nip it in the bud.
Nip it in the bud, yes. Often families feel so helpless, because especially with anorexia, I think, you know, it makes you feel so helpless because it becomes a power struggle in the house. And there's so much shame and stigma attached to it as well. But really, you know, for families out there to be able to reach out for professional help is very important. But I do want to add also, we had come to the family, you know, we say this with addiction as well. When the addicted person goes into recovery, the family also needs to go into recovery, because there's so much for the family also, you know, to deal with. And again, one of the things that I truly believe and have experienced, that it's all about the feelings, you know. And often there are some dysfunctions in the family, and that needs to be talked about and confronted. And so the family forms a very important part of the person who's suffering recovery and process as well.
Yeah, and these signs of relapses and fear on the family side as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is what I gauged from my experience, my own personal experience, is that sometimes you fall into it again. I fell into it, over, as I said, for 42 years. And, you know, get a little bit better, fall back into it when something traumatic happens to me, and then off I go into it again. And, you know, obviously when the family starts seeing this, and they start being fearful and that you're going to die, and all those kind of talk around you again puts a lot of pressure on you. So we just, as family, I just want to encourage you. Shirley has good, she can share her details with you now. If there's anybody that out there now, or you know of somebody, or in time to come, that can possibly need the help, but go and be encouraged. Go and get the help as a family, and be inclusive. Everybody needs to be part of it for the healing process. Because often we can, you know, so many unkind things happen within the home. Somebody withdraws, and then the guilt comes in and the remorse. So we just want to encourage you. So just give us, you know, how can you possibly help those that are listening to the program that could possibly get some help, all that they need? I mean, you're obviously online as well. You can do WhatsApp calls and all that as well, which is lovely. So distance is not an issue.
Yeah, I think, Renette, I do have to say that, you know, with anorexia, there's mild, moderate, and severe cases, as with any other eating disorder as well, you know. So I would say, first of all, if it's really severe, treatment, inpatient treatment is very important.
Yes,
okay?
Of course.
I think at the moment what I'm doing with my coaching is mostly I have clients. I have a few that has not been in treatment, but that it's mild, you know, and
yes,
mild to
so
moderate.
So you do the assessment.
So I can do the assessment. I can do the, just the working with body image, working with restructuring of the thinking, beliefs, et cetera, and, you know, and just provide that safe space where they can actually also begin to confront and talk about the feeling things, you know. But for other families where there is severe cases, treatment is, you know. And then I would, like I said, I have clients still which has been in treatment, but now the journey starts after treatment, you know, that support, you know. Whether it's meal support, whether it's support with just planning and purpose of what now, you know?
Yes, and you coach the families as well.
Absolutely, yeah, both families and the sufferer as well. But it's really, I really want to say it's not a quick fix. It's really not a quick fix. It's a long-term thing, and you said it, relapse is part of it, you know? It's like walking down the street and seeing that hole and falling down in it and seeing it and falling in again until you finally find your way. And so it does take a lot of patience, it takes a lot of empathy and compassion from families, from those around the sufferer. But even from, you know, we're talking about anorexia and just how hard they are on themselves. Even for themselves, it takes a lot of patience, empathy for themselves, self-compassion,
and finding
you know.
Themselves in the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
So family and friends, I just want to thank you so much, Shirley. That was great information. And just give us your phone number if you can give us some sort of light, you know, and maybe do an assessment for somebody if they need help. So just give us your details, please.
So my mobile number is 071-025-0669. And my email is shirley.leflier09@gmail.com.
Spell your surname, please.
L for little, E for egg. F for flower, L for little, E for egg, U for under, R for rose.
Leflier.
Leflier.
And yeah, it's quite an interesting name. But also, if you want to, you know, share with us any information or connect with us, our WhatsApp number is 081-729-1657. Our Telegram number is the same, 081-729-1657. Our SMS number is 37988. And we have a live Facebook page. Go to our Facebook page. We have so much happening there. And we also have a counseling department, 021-9177-777. And you take the option one, and we can maybe see how we can direct you and help you, and see if we can pray for you as well. And I would like to just encourage you just to interact with us, let us know how you get to know our guests, and if you want to know anything more about our guests, please contact us and we'll be able to help you. But look after yourselves, everyone. Be safe, stick to the rules, and we will see you next week. God bless you. Goodbye.
This insert was brought to you by Radio K Pulpit, 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.